Going Linux, episode 186, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Today's episode of Going Linux is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 75,000 titles. If you are a regular listener, you already know that we have a special URL that lets you get a free audiobook from Audible when you sign up for a 14-day free trial. Whether you are a regular listener or a new listener, if you haven't signed up, the place to go to get your free audiobook and 14-day trial is www.audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. There is currently no Audible player that runs natively in Linux, so before you sign up, please make sure that you can run the player under Wine or that you have a portable device like an Android or other smartphone that can run the Audible player. Again, that URL is www.audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux.
You know that new Mars thing that they sent over to the Mars, you know?
Yeah, the Mars rover. I've heard of the Mars.
The Mars thing that went to the Mars.
What is that thing called? Mars lander?
Curiosity.
Lander, rover.
Yeah. One of those guys. You know those things run Linux?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, we knew that.
Oh, okay. I didn't, and it's running on like a PowerPC. It's like 800 megahertz. It's like, I hope you don't have to replace the kernel anytime soon. And what about drivers? How do you get those up there?
Oh, they do that. They're updating the software right now.
Yeah, radio waves. Yeah, it's very slow, but it's radio waves.
I mean, do you really want to be the guy that borks that update and it just doesn't work anymore?
Oh. It's like, Right.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, it's not like you can just fly up there and fix it. You know? So I'm just sitting there going,
scary.
It's like, we don't know if this update worked or not. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. How much did this cost us? $16 billion? Okay.
Well, I know there have been budget cuts at NASA, like down to zero, but I think they have redundant systems there so that while one is being updated, the other one is actually working. So if they bork it, I'm sure they have some sort of network between the two that they can actually fix it remotely from the other system. I would hope.
But we are talking about NASA.
Yeah, we are talking about budget cuts, so it may just be the one. And if it messes up, it's just more multi-million dollars down the drain.
Well, actually, there is a probe on its way to Mars right now to hit the reset button, just in case.
Perfect.
And you do know everything was built by the cheapest person to bid on a contract, so that's always good to know.
No, they did a heck of a job on it. I could not believe that landing.
Yeah.
I looked at the simulations. I said, get out of here.
Who came up with that bright idea?
Oh, it was beautiful.
You know, I still say they're out in Arizona someplace, you know.
Oh, no, not that.
Conspiracy theorist.
Not me.
And
I would
Neil
never
Armstrong
be.
Armstrong was on a beach. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I would never do anything controversial.
Okay.
Okay, moving right along.
I'm so glad we had that little interlude.
Okay, guys, we received a lot of feedback following episode 185, where we talk about the fact that there is more to freedom than the four freedoms specified by the FFF's concept of free with a capital F software. Some of that feedback was agreeing with us wholeheartedly, and some sarcastically thanked us for not knowing what we were talking about.
Rather than read all of the feedback in its entirety, let's read some of the excerpts that kind of summarize the ideas that were shared with us.
And we're not leaving stuff out because we want to cover up the opinions of others or that we do not respect opinions that differ from ours. It's because our listeners, like you, have told us that continuing the left-right argument about free versus free on the show is not what they want to hear on the show. But it is one of the disagreements in the Linux and open source world. We've not avoided it, but for the sake of new Linux users, we will try not to publicly air the dirty laundry of the open source world in the future.
Let's get into some of the feedback. Jonathan Nadu sent us an email saying, "Great show, guys. This really started quite the conversation." He later followed up with, "I don't care if you don't mention my email on the show. I just wanted to respond, that's all. I respect all of you guys. I don't want you to think I'm looking for a fight or anything. Again, thanks for the great show and all that you do."
Yeah.
Hey, you're welcome, Jonathan.
Yeah, thanks very much for the feedback. Byer Brown provided an audio file. We won't be playing it, but to summarize, he wrote in his email, "I hold you and crew in very high regard. As long as you're making shows, I will always listen. Thank you for your time, energy, and benefit of your knowledge. You may have a minion, but I think I'm your and crew's biggest fan. God bless." And he had a side note. "It's okay if you don't play the audio. I never cared about that. I just wanted you guys to know I supported you. In my own voice, to me, it's more personal when you use your own voice. You rock."
Excellent.
Thanks,
Bob. We have a crew? Yeah.
We do now. It's, oh, okay. It's us.
Oh, I was still looking around.
Next up, Victor said, "Don't let the comments of a few offended listeners deter you from being yourselves. Otherwise, you'll be worrying all the time that you may say something wrong on your show. People need to realize that you are doing the show out of your free time without pay, and we are protected by free speech." Excellent point, Victor. And behind the scenes, we have done a lot of talking about this. And I think we've settled on the course that we're going to be taking in the future.
You bet. Thanks,
but
Victor.
I don't get paid.
Yeah, we were talking about doubling your salary, but
okay, great. Thanks.
I said we should add a zero to it.
Hey, that's fine.
Thanks, Victor. Corbuntu said, "Get us back in a Linux mood by handing Tom a wrench and letting him do some on-air wing walking during the next episode with a smiley face." Oh, God, no.
Yeah, I had the wrench today, and it was before the recording.
Yeah.
Didn't work out so well, but we got it all figured out.
Yeah, my audio might be breaking up a little. I'm installing Slackware.
Alrighty then. Our next email is from Mario. He is a developer and a Linux user in Montreal. Mario writes, "Hi everyone. I wish my first name was Bert to hear Tom say, 'Hey Bert.' So funny."
Well, Mario, let me see if I can think of something funny to say about your name. Let's take a brief intermission while I think. Nope, I can't think of a thing. So go on, Larry.
All right, and of course that was used under what do you call it when
fair use.
When you use something like that? Fair use, yes, for purely educational purposes. All right. Continuing with Mario's email. "When I did my research for Linux podcast, I was looking for Linux information, tricks, and how to, of course, but the free versus free is an important subject which affects not only the Linux world, but the open source world overall, as well as Windows and Mac OS. I believe what you guys did by talking about this subject was a great introduction. your opinions gave us different perspectives, which I appreciate the most. Now it's our turn to read up on the subject and make up our own minds. As for buying software, I'm willing to pay for it as long as it fulfills my needs. As for Valve or any big players, it means one thing. Linux and open source is becoming more and more popular, so big players want to sneak in. I think it's a good thing. It's maybe the last step to filling the gaps in gaming. Again, thank you for taking the time to reply to my email and for the great job you guys are doing by putting together the podcast and providing us useful information to get things done. P.S. Since episode 183, I know what 73 is, so 73 to Bill.
There you go.
Actually, I got to change something. 73, I used to say goodbye, but actually I got corrected, they're right. It means best regards, but I always used it as like, okay, goodbye, see ya, have a nice day, you know, whatever. But its official terminology is best regards, so I stand corrected. Thanks, I cannot remember his call sign. I had to look that up and put it in the show notes. But he corrected me, and he's absolutely right.
Yeah, 73 always sounded so formal to me. Maybe you should just stick with 88 or something.
No, we're not doing 88. Okay. You are not my wife. Okay. That would open a whole new can of worms. I am not going anywhere near.
And next up, Mark's comments include these. I've been a regular listener to your podcast for about 2.5 years, and your show was one of the main influences in me going completely Linux at home this spring. Your show has given me a good insight into the many aspects of Linux and pointed me toward a number of programs and applications that I would have missed otherwise. The recent bringing into the show of Minion Bill gives the show a deeper knowledge base than previously and is to be welcomed. I recently saw Richard Stallman speak in Manchester, England, where he spoke for 90 minutes eloquently without notes. He was interesting, challenging, and yes, a little provocative. His insistence on calling Linux GNU/Linux is obviously a personal conceit, but his defense of GNU Linux and open free software was brilliant. In his talk, he pointedly asked questions about the threats and dangers of others controlling our personal data and information. His belief that freedom is best served by free and open source software is one that I share. If you disagree with Stallman, that's your prerogative. But be aware, while Bill may think calling Stallman a socialist is a good argument against him, many of your listeners, especially those outside the U.S., don't necessarily think that socialism is a dirty word. Stallman can be provocative and wrong, but open source is richer for his eccentric input. I will carry on listening and look forward to future episodes with practical information for Linux users and switching to Linux on Going Linux. Yours for free open source software linked with community and cooperation. Parentheses, socialism. Okay, well, thanks for that, and you're right. We do have a kind of a bias on this side of the pond against socialism. So, well, at least some of us do.
Now we'll get into some email that lets us help people. Paul comments on the need for antivirus software on Linux. And he writes, "Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill."
Hi, Paul.
I've been running Ubuntu and now Mint 12 for several months, but never ran an antivirus and thought I'd better get one running. I downloaded and installed clamav from the command line, sudo apt-get install clamav, then attempted to update the virus definitions by using the command fresh clam. I then received the following response, error, can't open fresh clam log file in append mode. I've checked several forums, all without a definite remedy. From the looks of the forum content, this is a relatively common problem with clamav. This is a bit frustrating and really should not happen to a user merely trying to update virus definitions. Any suggestions? Thanks for the podcast and all the work you do. Paul.
Well, Paul, this is something that Tom and I have talked about at least a couple of times with our previous episodes where we've discussed antivirus on Linux, and each of us have had the same problem, right, Tom?
Yeah. I tried ClamAV. I ran into that problem. It said, well, I don't need AV anyway.
Yeah, the only way I found to get around this problem is to run ClamAV as root. So sudo and then run ClamAV.
So it would be sudo fresh clam.
Yeah. So the what that does is it gives you access to those log files, which apparently are locked down so that they're only accessible by a root user as opposed to a regular user. I'm not sure why they do it that way. Maybe they intend to have ClamAV run as root. If that's the case, they should include that in the instructions. And I haven't seen that in the instructions, but that's the only way I have been able to get ClamAV to run properly.
Larry, how would you change this? That's how you do it on a Debian system, but how would you do it on a Fedora system? Do you know? Or an RPM system that doesn't... Do all of them let you use sudo? I thought that was...
No, they don't all use apt.
Right. And they don't all use sudo as well. Some of them you have to use
super user.
Or sudo su, or a bunch of other different things. So your mileage may vary, and it depends on your particular distribution. If you've been using that distribution for a while, I'm assuming you know how to get things to run as root.
And if you don't, check the forms.
Yes.
And he did that. I got to say, though, I'm still not running any kind of antivirus, and it doesn't worry me. Now, a couple of weeks ago, a news story came out that said there was some new malware that attacks Windows, Linux, and Macs. And there really wasn't a lot of information there. The one thing they said was they didn't know what the infection vector was. They hadn't determined that yet, but they were looking into it. And so they didn't know if it was coming in through email or through video or what. And I wanted to dig deeper into that, so I found everything I could online about it, and it was all pretty much the same boilerplate, the same thing I read on the first article. So everybody was just parroting what was said in some article somewhere, and I've heard nothing about it since, so I think it was bogus. I call shenanigans.
Yeah, that could be. And as we've mentioned before, even though Linux isn't targeted by virus writers and malware writers, there's still phishing scams and other things that can get to you. I mean, if you submit to an email that says, your email has just won the UK lottery for £100 million, all you have to do is send us your name, address, phone number,
bank account
number, so we can make the deposit and the password to your bank account, then shame on you.
Yeah.
How'd you read my email, Larry? I got that just yesterday.
Yeah, I've won so many of these contests that I didn't enter. It's amazing.
I found out by doing a little research about that malware scare for Linux and Windows and Mac OS. I read somewhere that it was related to an outdated Java client.
Imagine that.
I didn't see anything like that.
Well, because the reason they brought it up, well, you know, I also read other forums, is that some of the Windows 8 preview, they had to push an update because they were using outdated Java, and that's what they thought was causing it for the problems for the other other systems. But they said that it wouldn't a big deal because a lot of like Linux and Mac OS, which are already production systems, were already pushed updates. So your mileage may vary, but that's what they said. It was Java.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing with Linux, because the updates are delivered to you through the update manager as they are completed and ready to go. You get the updates much more quickly than our friends on the Windows platform who have to wait for the second Tuesday of the month to get whatever's been collected for the previous month. So, you know, even if there was something that was targeted at Linux, the likelihood that it would last for very long is pretty slim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a lot of eyes looking at the code in Linux.
Yep. So if you want to run ClamAV, go ahead and run it. You may have to run it as root, which, you know, has some inherent risks there as well. So you might want to look at something else or dig into what's going on with ClamAV and figure out why it's not giving you access to those log files. Maybe just change the log files so that you have access to them. Just change the permission on the log file. That might work as well. I don't know whether that's kosher, but, you know, go for it. See what harm can be done.
What
I mean,
could go wrong?
For all, what could possibly go wrong? Here we are with that wrench, Tom. Yeah. Here you go. Grab it and go.
Here's the sockets.
I dropped the wrench. I'm using a hammer now. It works just as well.
Yeah, perfect. Well, let's move on to George. He shared some of his ideas on Linux freedoms and cross-platform compatibility. George writes, acknowledging Stallman is an ideologue, you guys have something foundationally very wrong. Linux is revolutionary. Linux is a social movement. Like it or not, Linux embodies the ideal of Karl Marx. And he quotes, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need, unquote. Linux gives, quote, power to the people, power they don't need to grow from the barrel of a gun.
Why am I waving my fist in the air?
No. Just think of iOS, which is where Apple is taking OS X. Derived in part from FreeBSD and locked down so tight developers have to cough up credit cards and credit checks to be approved, Windows RT will be more of the same. Windows 8 heading that way. Could Linux end up locked down like OS X? My wife works for HAL, H-A-L, and HAL... I'm thinking of pod bay doors.
I know.
I don't know.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Yes. And Hal is pushing Red Hat, on which Hal runs its proprietary services. Why pay Microsoft when thousands of socialized Linux developers will do the heavy lifting for free? Pretty good business plan. Where it goes bad, though, is with the general introduction of proprietary software to Linux. I've tried to replace Excel and Word with LibreOffice and OpenOffice, but exchanging documents with outside legal counsel, some of whom still rely on Word Perfect, no way. Do not open a lengthy deed with complicated legal description into OpenOffice, edit, then send back downtown to a lawyer using WordPerfect or Word. So if I were interested in becoming a 100% Linux shop and Microsoft Office were an offer, I'd install forthwith, which is the end of hope for Libre to catch up. In fact, I will be interested to see the interplay and impact of Microsoft's Office 365 and Linux. And George provides a link we'll have in the show notes to an article comparing Microsoft Office 365 and the Linux environment. Best I can tell, the Linux kernel is just fine. Best I can tell, it isn't hard to cook up a personal distribution, which may be why there are so many of those, but the core applications needed for Linux to seriously challenge Windows and Mac for the desktop are AWOL, away without leave, right? As vendors, such as Valve and Steam, move proprietary DRM software onto Linux, I think the software made for profit by wage serfs will push aside the nearly as good software made by dedicated volunteers. Not being a Linux license expert, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be a big step from putting DRM software onto Linux to making a DRM'd Linux. Isn't that pretty much what's in all the hardware invisibly running Linux? And isn't that maybe a good thing? Sure wouldn't want a drive-by hack of my furnace. But back to Richard Stallman, he's utopian. He's unrealistic, but he may be correct. I'd say right, but he's not. George from Tulsa.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, George.
And next up, let's see, Andy has some issues using his gaming mouse on Linux. Hey, guys.
Hey, Andy.
I really like your podcast. As a new Linux user, I find it very informative. I have a question for you guys, and I can't seem to find an answer to it. Do you know how to lower the sensitivity of the mouse? I already have it set to the lowest setting in hardware controls, but it's still quite fast. I'm using a Razer Death Adder gaming mouse. Ooh.
Sounds dangerous.
Yeah. It works just fine when I boot into Windows. The only thing I have found on this is an old website that is not open anymore from a guy who did a Linux driver for this mouse, and the driver is no longer available. Ooh, bummer. Thanks for any help you guys can give. Andy.
Yeah, and I wrote back to Andy and suggested a link to an article to a post in the Ubuntu forums, which we'll include in the show notes. And from what I can tell, these gaming mice have their sensitivity set so high that it causes a problem with standard generic Linux drivers for mice. The article has a suggestion for making a tweak to lower the resolution so that you can use it in Linux, and I suspect that will work. It's a bit presumptive that you're an experienced Linux user, though, so you might need a little geek to normal speak translation, Andy, if you're not a longtime Linux user who knows all these things. I haven't heard back from Andy, so I don't know whether he hasn't read the email yet or whether he's gotten along just fine, but write us back and let us know how it goes,
right,
Andy.
Okay, guys, David has a topic suggestion for us. He said, first, thanks for all your work presenting the podcast. Second, I occasionally program in the old Borland Delphi, which works only with Windows. So, of course, I cannot use Linux. Perhaps a podcast on doing programming such as this in Linux with database connection would be appropriate. Database connectivity has been my bane, so I have stuck with Paradox after trying to connect to MySQL. I once did write one program in C, which took me a month to do because I had to learn it as I went along. Finally, even though I got it to work somewhat, I gave up and did the work with only a few lines in BASIC. LibreOffice and OpenOffice do have a database program, but a programming language is needed to make them truly useful. Thanks for any thoughts, David.
Well, David, I think it would we could probably crank out an episode on programming in, what do you think, guys, 6 months so that we can learn how to program as we develop the podcast?
Oh, heck no. We've done podcasts about stuff we know nothing about.
That's true. Yeah, in fact, you know, we've done some shell script things, and I don't think any of us here is a professional programmer. We're not the right people to go into depth on programming. What I do know is that if you learn something like Python rather than Borland Delphi, you'll have something that actually is cross-platform. So, you know, I would suggest you look into that as a possible expansion of your programming languages. But, you know, I think there are probably podcasts out there or resources out there on the internet that would be able to help you with this. We're not the right guys for that. But thanks for the email. Okay, Rick has one for Bill. Hi, Larry. Hi, Tom. Hello, Executive Minion Bill.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, Rick.
Just listen to episode 185. Glad you have survived the firestorms. I still love you guys, even if you did hate on Windows once. I must admit, I still have a WOS on one of my laptops, as there is some proprietary software I need for my service to my church that requires it. I also have to use it at work. The rest of my machines are running Linux Mint 13, and I have an Ubuntu file server. But that isn't why I'm writing. I am a ham, NZ2I. That is an I, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. NZ2I is my call sign. I wanted to help Bill clarify the meaning of 73. This must be the guy you were talking about, Bill.
It is.
Okay. The meaning of 73. It actually does not mean goodbye. The formal meaning is best regards. One might ask why you could not just say best regards instead of some obscure number. The reason is this was shorthand developed before voice communication became prevalent. Morse code using continuous wave, or CW, was used, and even a proficient operator can only send or receive at 30 to 40 words per minute. Abbreviations are commonly used to speed communications. 73 was chosen as one of those abbreviations. You will find that the format of the dits and das for the numbers 7 and 3 are reversed. Perhaps that motivated its selection. Another bit of ham trivia. You will note I say hi to Larry and Tom and hello to Bill. That was purposeful, because I didn't want Bill to think I was laughing at him. In Morse code, H-I is used to indicate laughter. Yes. Best regards, Rick.
Thanks, Rick. I stand corrected.
Yeah, the two numbers are mirror images of each other in Morse code. 73 comes out, da-da, did-it-it-da-da.
Okay.
So there you go.
And it's okay to laugh at me, Rick, because Tom does it all the time.
Oh, I'm not laughing at you, I'm laughing about you.
Finally, Martin provides a Gone Linux story, a very short one. Hi, Larry, Tom, and Chief Minion Bill.
Hey, hi, Martin.
The company I am working for has now 50% Linux users. It is far above the 1% everybody is talking about. We are only 4 people in total, but who cares? And a smiley face. Best regards, Martin.
I just laughed at what he said, Bill.
Wait a minute. So if they got 50% of 4 people is
right.
2, so, okay. Yeah, okay. That works.
There you go, 50%. Let's try to get that everywhere. We've actually, if you average his company and the people on our podcast, that brings it up to 75%.
Nice.
Because we're 100% Linux.
Yes. Well, some of us are.
Yeah.
too much math for me.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah.
So that's it for our podcast. But I have a software pick. Yes,
cool.
I do. Me. The person who never has a software pick. Actually, this is prompted by a thread that was in our forums, the Going Linux forums. Yes, we do have forums. And this was from Steve McLaughlin, the door-to-door geek. He was looking for an alternative to the Windows program AutoHotkey. AutoHotkey is a program that allows you to automate keystrokes on your keyboard, mouse clicks, and other things so that you can write a little script and with the click of one or two or some key combination, spit out an entire paragraph, for example. So I use this kind of thing at work where, people send me emails directly instead of contacting the help desk. So I have a little thing at work using AutoHotkey because I too at work use Windows, and I just type out use the help desk semicolon, and when I hit the semicolon and a space, it writes a whole paragraph for them on basically saying, when you send me an email directly instead of sending it to the help desk, we really can't track your request, mm-hmm. and I may not be available, and blah, 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 blah. Please use the help desk. Here's how you do that. Pick up the phone or send an email to this email address. So it's a whole paragraph of stuff, and all I have to do is type out, use the help desk, semicolon. So that's how I use it at work.
Sounds kind of grumpy.
Well, yeah. Well, I originally had it, use the help desk, stupid, but I didn't think that was really appropriate. So anyway, the alternative in Mac is something called Text Expander. And the program under Linux that does the same thing as these two. Actually, it does probably more, is a program called AutoKey. I've been using it for years. Steve McLaughlin was surprised to find that it's in the repositories. So, Steve, you're welcome. And if you want to go so far as to script it, you can do scripts in AutoKey using standard programming language if you wish. And there are little tutorials and there are sample scripts. And what we'd really like to do is get some sample scripts. If you use AutoKey, let's put them on the forum. We'll have a link to our forum post and share them with everybody on the Going Linux podcast so that we can share the wealth.
Okay. I don't have a software pick.
And I have nothing.
Bill, what was that thing that you showed me that makes the... You have to run it from the command line, and it just makes this wonderful psychedelic screensaver?
Electric Sheep.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Electric Sheep?
It's very cool.
Okay, so Bill, you're going to have to provide a link to this thing in the show notes. Is it in Linux?
It's in the repositories.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. Search for Electric Sheep. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll do that later. Okay, well, that wraps our episode. Our next episode will be Computer America number 55. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use the forums to leave your topic suggestion in the thread labeled Topic Suggestions. And that forum is at forum.goinglinux.com.
If you want to support our efforts, click the donate button while you're there.
You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, and our voicemail line is 1-904-468-7889.
Follow our show updates with the handle @goinglinux on Twitter, or follow Larry Bushy on Google+.
You can download the episodes from the website, or you can use the HTML5 or Flash Player to play them right on the show notes page.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.